Hi everyone. As the new year begins, full of opportunity and new milestones to be achieved, I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening to the Indian American Experience podcast. These conversations have enriched my own perspective and experience as an American of Indian heritage. And I hope these episodes have helped kindle new conversations, reflections, and produced in some way an enhanced sense of curiosity for you, the listeners, too. And I thank you for listening and for your feedback. For the early part of 2024, I will continue season one, interviewing people of my generation, but I can hardly wait to interview our kids' generation, millennials and Gen Z, and hear their takes on the Indian American experience and their definitions of culture and heritage and what it means to them. And all of that is coming up in season two. So keep listening and energizing me to continue having and broadcasting these interesting conversations, and have a happy and joyful 2024. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. My guest today is Seema Chetal. Seema came to the U.S. about three decades back in her 20s. She's currently managing director at J.P. Morgan Wealth and Asset Management, and is married with three adult children. Hi, Seema.
Hi, Bindya. Thank you so much for inviting me to this show.
It's my pleasure. So let's start with when you came here. How old were you and what brought you to this country?
I was 23 years old. I was already married and I had stars in my eyes and I already had a green card as well. I was dreaming that I would come here and this is going to be the land of opportunities. So it was an exciting time.
Yeah. Did you do your master's as soon as you came here?
You know, when I came here, I already had a master's from India and I was ambitious and I was thinking, you know, I have done these degrees and I'll just land in the US and I'll have the perfect job. But that's not how it kind of turned out. Mm-hmm. I did realize that I had to study for, I tried to apply for jobs. It was hard to get anything or anywhere. So I did decide to kind of get another master's when I came here, went to business school, and took me almost like 2-3 years to figure things out and get launched here. Okay. So that's how it happened.
So do you recall doing anything to acclimate or acculturate to living in the U.S. when you came?
Right. I do remember a couple of instances very clearly. Hmm. The minute I landed in the U.S., we were received by some friends of ours who came to the airport. And it was an amazing thing for me to see the dynamic between the husband and wife. She is a sociologist, the professor at Hofstra University. So I spent a little bit of my first week with her. Mm-hmm. And she opened up my mind and had a huge amount of impact. And then I always tell you, I have been fortunate. And I know I appreciate the teaching that you do in your spare time, because there have been so many teachers along the way. I think my mom was definitely one who wanted me to be ambitious. She gave the same level of opportunities as she gave to our brother. And so that was a huge influence. But then when I got here, her name is Maggie. Maggie had such an amazing, different view from what I had been accustomed to. And giving, you know, it was more about equal opportunity for men and women, but it's more about just being mindful of people on the street, being mindful about everything, and also owning your space, right? Just speaking out your mind. That to me was an eye-opener. And you asked me what I had to do to acclimatize myself. I think for the, even now, 30 years later, I think it's been a struggle or not been consciously speaking out things that I really want to say and being more balanced. And when you're trying to be balanced, sometimes the message you want to give is not delivered. People then hear it, or you're not expected to be holding the opinions and they'd rather follow the norms. So I think that has been kind of a learning experience along the journey, especially when you're coming into a new culture, that people have expectations that you would follow the norms rather than create the norms or be an equal participant in the conversation. But I think it's up to me, right? Or up to you and I or everybody else who comes in to be clear about what we want and what we stand for. And that has been a long journey, still ongoing.
So I'm hearing you say that you had to maybe unlearn some parts of who you were when you came here in terms of being more candid or
Yes.
more expressive?
Right, right.
Okay.
And honestly, I'm wondering if the people now, is in 30 years ago, it was a different place. Maybe now, even in India, people are more open and candid. Yeah, but for me, certainly, there was some unlearning required.
Interesting. Yeah, and it sounds familiar. So all these years later, now you've been an investment expert for many decades. And when you look back at your professional success, what do you mainly attribute it to?
So one is I was ambitious, right? I still am. I love my job. I still do. And as I stuck around, I got better and better at it, right? It's not that there were not moments in time when I said I can't balance work and life. I got to think maybe I should quit, but I never really wanted to quit. I took a couple of years of sabbatical in the middle and I was not happy. So it's kind of sticking around and sticking it out has been an important ingredient to success. Because things kind of go up and down, but if you stick it out with anything in life, right, things kind of have a better chance of working out. And secondly, somebody, I think Indra Nooyi, was reading an article about her, and she said the number one thing you can do in life is pick the right partner, right? Somebody who's respectful of you and you have mutual respect, and you can share the life and work balance thing with each other. So that has been a very important part of the equation as well, because I don't want to presume that everybody is fortunate to have the choices that I had. And the last thing, living in New Jersey, I think we also were able to create a community very quickly, New York, New Jersey area, to have a group of friends and caregivers, right, who could, for the kids that I could rely on, which has been a big part of it.
Right, right. So switching gears a little bit, in your professional life, do you see your Indian heritage playing any role in how you're perceived?
Certainly. I do think that, generally speaking, Asian, African, Americans, and it could be perceived that we are more likely to be submissive, be more likely to not ask for leadership positions. So that can be a perception. But it's because of lack of interaction or lack of our standing up, right? So that's going to me kind of going back to your original question, which I think is the key, that how we portray ourselves becomes even more important, because we all have preconceived notions, right? We all perceive people from a certain region to be behaving like in a certain way.
Yeah.
But once you interact with them, then that changes. But if they don't speak their mind, then nothing changes. I also want to give a plug to a friend of mine, and her name is Madhvi, and maybe you should talk to her one time. And she's actually the head of diversity at one of the tech firms, and more recently, and I have learned a lot from her. And the one thing is what you just said, that it's okay to be respectful. We want to be respectful out of our culture, don't want to be controversial, don't want to. We want to be collaborative, but not give up on things that are really important and be able to articulate things that are really important to us up front. And so that candor, but again, being able to do it in a way that's not putting down anyone. It's just like, I need this. Or what do you want me to do? But this is what I'm looking for. So being able to articulate that has been helpful. For me, I am generally more of an introvert, less likely to actually go out and talk to people. So allowing myself takes me time to think. It's very hard for me to just go and talk to people. I need time in a room to just get comfortable and then start speaking. And so, I've gone from just feeling the pressure to being okay with it. That if I ask 3 questions and I only talk to 2 people instead of 30 in the room, that is okay, right? So that has taken me a while.
Yeah, just allowing yourself to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such an elusive balance, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of balance, now let me ask you, going back to your personal life, about a different kind of balance. In parenting your children, how did you and your husband try to strike a balance between your Indian and American cultures?
Right. I think early on in their years, right, up to 10, 11, 12 years. We did try. We never went to the temple before they were born, but once they were born, we started going and doing more Indian things because we did think that it was important for them to understand where we come from. And honestly, it's a great culture, right? It's a great culture with a lot of commitment to each other. That's kind of the foundation of Indian marriages, right? And commitment to the family where you belong. So just give, you know, that's kind of the being has been very important to us. But I think as they grew up, by the time they developed their own identity, it was very clear they would say, and it's rightly so, that mom, dad, I'm an American. I'm not really an Indian, right? We're brought up here. Our values are here. And that is right too, right? So it kind of became, I think, first from inculcating some of the cultural values. Then I think after 10 or 11 years, it became more, the focus became more on the values, which are the same for both the cultures, right? It's that, you know, you believe in hard work. You believe in being respectful of each other, being recognizing what people's strengths are, and being kind, all those things, right? So being true to yourself, right? That's kind of a big American thing.
Yeah,
the candor that you've all been talking about earlier on, it's an acquired trait, but it's a wonderful trait. So that has been, so now I think it's, and so that's kind of been, that was kind of giving them the freedom to be what they are. That I think has been the great learning, give them some values, but then kind of they own it and they will do with it what they want to do with it, but we have to trust them. And so that's where we are. I mean, so I think we are fine. And, you know, they have friends from different backgrounds, and the closest friends are probably from all over the world now, which is a special thing about the US. You meet many people. So I think I learned from them as much as they've learned from our culture.
Sounds like a very well-principled parenting, as hard as it is. And you were asking me earlier, just, you know, from my interviews, what's come to the fore. It's the same. It's the things that you've talked about. No one really exclusively identifies certain ways to be as exclusive Indian values. There is an overlap. In fact, my guests have drawn out a lot in common between Indian and American values, and even the countries, just the diversity we experience. And then parenting, it's a very tough thing for us immigrant parents to straddle the two lines. And then just the way you said it, just letting them be after inculcating the basic values. I think that sounds like just the correct way to do it. So for you now, going forward after a long successful career, what do you aspire to do more of, or less of, or add to what you already do?
Right. So I think I'm more focused on health. Now the kids are on their own, they're grown and on their own. So I think more time for ourselves is going to be important.
Yeah.
And focused on healthy living. I think conversations like this, or just being around people who are intellectually or having curiosity about different things, and hanging out with people who have similar curiosity or want to learn more or do more, learning from them. I think that is going to be important on an ongoing basis.
Yeah,
I would definitely would like to travel more again to expand the horizon. To me, it's always a history of the place. And some of the beauty of the places that we visit as well, but also kind of their cultural norms or their history is very fascinating.
Yeah.
And then last of all would be, I think we have time to give a bit more outside of the immediate family. So I would hope that we can give back in, you know, to just to have make the world a better place. We do a little bit in the game and as a part of a community, not alone.
Yeah.
But as part of a larger community, do something.
Absolutely. I think you already do some volunteer work and it's focused a little bit on India, right?
Yeah, education.
VIPA, is that the organization that you're associated with?
Right.
I'll put the link down in the show notes.
Oh, awesome.
And in your future aspirations, even in terms of giving or traveling, do you particularly want to focus on India more, or is it now just time to have more of a global outlook?
I think that, as you were saying earlier, that in your podcast, The common theme seems to be that the values are similar.
Yeah.
I think the struggles are also similar on a global basis. For instance, when we talk about Vibha and the giving, one thing that we found is that teachers have a huge impact, right? And there are many things that you have to do to give to raise a child or give a child a good education. But if you boil it down to which communities have been more successful, it is where the teacher felt empowered and they were motivated. They were empowered, they were motivated. And since they are the ones who are interacting with 20, 30 kids on everyday basis, so they were able to make the most amount of impact. So long story short, I think these are, I have been working with Vipa for more than a decade, but I find that some of the lessons learned there are global in nature. So if we can now expand the dialogue, right, it could apply very much. And we're only focusing on the kids who come from marginalized backgrounds and only focusing on giving them foundational learning. Again, the concept is once they know how to read, write, think, they can, in today's world, they can actually pick up the rest of the learning on their own. It's easier now than it was before through digital learning. And so focus on some of the processes, especially empowering the teachers, some basic tools, and actually it could be global. I have not thought about it, Bindiya, till you kind of mentioned it. But if there's a way to engage more people to make it a global phenomenon, that would be awesome.
That sounds wonderful. And on this very high inspiring note, thank you so much, Seema, for joining me and giving me your time.
And thank you, Bindiya, for bringing out so many thoughts that I hadn't even thought about until you prompted them. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Seema. And as usual, I'll be back next week with another wonderful representative of the Indian American community. Hope you'll join me too.